Welcome to Unhinged with your host, Teresa Romer, motivational speaker, fashion expert, and fashion guru.
I am your host, Teresa Romer, with my infamous co-host, Michael Pierce.
Howdy, y'all.
Are you practicing that howdy, y'all, for the big rodeo?
Well, I prefer to call it rodeo, but yes, I am practicing for the rodeo.
I saw you on TV the other day talking about the rodeo and titties.
Oh my goodness.
It was good. So titty. You what?
I said hashtag titties. It's gonna live on forever.
Well, we know how you love titties.
I really do.
So, you know, unfortunately, that's not what our topic today is about. You know, we're not going to be talking about titties, but it's probably something most people don't want to talk about. But I think there comes a point in your life or a few times in your life where you literally have to talk about it because it's on your mind.
Is it sex, a new car, whether or not to break up with that spouse, whether to buy the shoes? This could be any number of things, Teresa Romer. What is it?
Well, you know, sex is on my brain like 24/7, so that's not something I have to think about. That's not something I have to think about a couple times a year or a couple times in my lifetime. That's like a couple times every hour on the hour.
Such a man in that way.
I know. I'm such a slut sometimes, but my husband loves it.
I bet he does. He's quite happy, I'm sure.
So really, I really want to talk today about mortality.
Oh, gosh.
I know. And you know, no, but you know what? Sometimes people, when you say that word, they freak out. They all of a sudden freeze. They don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about death. I don't want to talk about my funeral. I don't want to, you know, they just, you know, if you talk about wills and getting your trust in order, nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to do it because they think, I guess,
go ahead.
No, I think if they think about it or talk about it, it's going to happen like right now or something. I don't know. People just freak out about it.
I will talk about my funeral all day long because this is going to be the biggest, gayest thing second only to my wedding. I have no problem talking about that. But I totally get the not talk because I did, prior to going into oil and gas, I did wills and that trust stuff. And it's always a fun conversation to say, so when you're dead, what do they want to do to your body? Who gets your kids? Who gets your luggage? It's really it's a happy, fun time for all.
Yeah, but what a lot of people don't realize, and Lamar and I meet with the estate planners almost yearly, it seems like, because everything changes all the time.
It's smart to do that.
Well, but it's amazing. People don't realize that if you do not have control of your estate, the government does. And why would you want to trust your entire life to a bunch of strangers?
Or even worse, if you don't spell out what you want, your heirs will fight tooth and nail, destroy each other. I have seen so many people fight over grandma's doilies. You have no idea.
Oh, I believe me, I understand all of this. I mean, I experienced it for the first time in my life when my brother died. And my sister was actually left in charge of his estate. And she would not even let even our own father have anything of his sons.
You're kidding.
No, she was like, no, it all has to be sold in the estate and the money has to go to his daughter. And my dad was like, this was my son. I want his leather jacket. I want this. I want, no. And I'm telling you what, my sister became like this evil person. And I was like, oh my God, she called the cops on my father.
Are you kidding?
And made my father hand over the leather jacket and these tools and all this kind of stuff. It was horrible. So that was my first experience of dealing with what it's like to deal with estates and all that kind of stuff. And then when my dad died, I kept asking him prior to his death to get his estate in order. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. And I'm telling you what, right after he passed away, and it's been 6 years, almost seven now, the family feud was on. It was horrible. And, you know, he didn't really have much to fight over, but my siblings all thought there was something there to fight over. And so it caused people not to even talk. So I want to ask you, Michael.
Oh, no.
Yes. The hot seat. Does mortality scare you? Like what's your biggest fear when it comes to mortality? Is it that you'll die too young or that you won't get to see your children grow to marry and have grandchildren. I mean, like, what's your biggest fear when it comes to mortality?
I have so many. I'm in a full-on midlife crisis mode, and this podcast is going to send me into therapy.
No, this is therapy. This is therapy. This is therapy. You get to share.
But I don't have any medication. I need some Xanax for this conversation. Some Xanax is all I'm asking for. No, I am so freaked out about it. I remember being as a little kid, I've always been afraid of dying. And I think part of my stuff actually stems back to my parents never talked about this stuff. I remember when I had a great grandmother who died, they didn't say anything. When my cat would die, they wouldn't even tell me. I would be like, oh, where's the cat? And like months of me asking, where's the cat? Finally, at like 6 months after the cat had died and they buried him, they kept saying, he's in the backyard, which really meant he was in the tree. And so it was always this thing that was never discussed or talked about. So this day I'm like, my dad could die. And my mom's like, he's in the backyard. So no, I think that not knowing,
right,
kind of, I don't know, promulgated all that for me.
Well, you know, I think maybe because I've had a few deaths in my lifetime, I'm mm-hmm. I'm a little farther ahead in knowing not to be so freaked out about it. It's kind of like now it's like, hey, if my brother's gone there and my son has gone there and my dad's gone there, like, you know, what do I need to be so scared about? You know, I think my biggest fear is that I don't get everything done that I want to get done before it's time, because we don't know when it's time.
So let me ask you then, I think another big part of this is, do you think that there is something after this life, that you go into a heaven or afterlife, without having to say too much, is there something more for you after this world?
Of course. Of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't believe we're put on this universe to only live this little short period of time on this place called Earth. I think there's an eternity out there. I don't think when we close our eyes for the final curtain that it's over. I don't believe that for one second. I think we're in eternity forever. We may not be there in the extent that we're in our bodies like right now and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. But I cannot believe for one minute that we're brought into this universe only for this actual very short period of time, if you really look at it, compared to all of eternity.
Amen. I that's a much more comforting view of death than I think. And maybe that's where a lot of people struggle. That I just focus on what my grandmother lived to almost being 100. And there are a lot of people on that side that live very long. And I remember having discussions with her many, many times where she would talk about death. She said, at some point, you will get so old, you'll be wanting to go. I hope right. I get to that place, not I'm sitting in like a post office and a shooter shows up. Like, I think about that, you know, and which is a scary reality right now in our world, too. So I don't know. The idea of dying does scare me. I'm missing out so much because I think life is really good right now. Things are going well. Even when things aren't going well, it's still pretty damn lucky to be above ground.
Right, right. I'll totally agree. 100%. 100%. But like I said, I can remember when my brother died and he was my best friend, my buddy, my pal. And the preacher actually looked at me and he said, you know, you're not crying because you're sad for him. You're crying for yourself because you're going to miss him. And you want him back. You want to spend more time with him. So you're only crying for yourself. You're really not crying for him. And I thought, wow, that's probably so true.
That is very true. The funerals are for the living. They're not for the dead. That's very true.
Right. You know, and for me to think that my baby brother has gone before me and my son has gone before me and now my dad, you know, I just have to think, you know, I can remember the guilt when my brother died because I was the big sister, right? And mm-hmm. and he died and they wanted to put him in the ground, right? And I stood there at the casket and I screamed and I cried and I was like, no, you can't put him down there. You you can't put him somewhere where I've never checked out. Like, I haven't checked it out. You
can't. Oh, like, I want to go see that hole. I need to lay down there, test this.
Well,
that's kind of sweet.
And I don't even think it was the hole I was talking about. I was just talking about where are you going to take him? Because I need to go check it out because I'm his big sister. I'm supposed to protect him. He's my little brother. You can't just take him somewhere where I haven't checked it out yet. I mean, I freaked out.
Were you young or older when he passed away?
I was 28.
Still very 27. Young.
27, 28. Yeah. And he was only 23. So, you know, I was his protector. I was like, oh no, you can't take, you know, and I can remember just sobbing like, oh my God, I just felt so guilty that I had not gone ahead of him and checked things out and made sure it was okay for him to go there. No, does that make sense? It was
absolutely
weird. It was weird. And now with my son and my father, I'm like, well, they're all up there having fun together. And now they're just waiting on me saying, you know, what's taking you so long?
That's a lovely way to look at it. It's much prettier, nicer than the scary way I look at it. I'm going to adopt that. I like yours. I'm going to check that box.
No, I always feel like you get taken off this earth because you get your job done ahead of time. You know, like, so I'm thinking, wow, I'm a slacker.
Well, that's actually a really good philosophy. I hope that's right, because if so, I'm going to start underperforming so that I cannot complete my task. I'm just going to suck at everything. I'd be like 120. God's like, he's got to go. I'm sorry, you know. He's just not going to pass the test. Let's just give him a C minus. That's what I'm doing. I'm just going to suck at everything. We're now like, I can't go. Look at that. I'm still working.
But name one person that has got to live forever.
Well, I don't know if vampires are allowed to come out of the closet yet. I think they might be our new civil rights movement. I don't know.
I'm just saying, if you go back to the beginning of mankind, there's no one that's ever been allowed to stay on this earth forever. So what makes us think we are?
Well, that brings up an interesting, how many fables and part of our history talk about living forever, which begs the question, if you had the chance to be a vampire and live forever and stay young and beautiful as you are now, would you do it?
I think I'd get lonely for the rest of my family that wasn't here anymore. Like,
oh, we'll bump them off one at a time, too. Just the ones you like. Just the ones you like.
Because I'm thinking, why would I want to stay here if everybody that's in my family and everybody that I love has gone on?
You have a really good view of death, then. I think that for you, it's not an end. I think it's just a next step in the journey. That's actually very sweet and sort of comforting. Yeah, my husband didn't have it. He had a brother who passed away. And now, even when we were doing our wills and talking about, like, what do you want to have happen with the remains? Do we want to get buried or cremated and all that? Like, he has a real hard time even discussing those things. So it's really interesting that both of you have suffered tragic losses early on in your life and went away from it with very different outlooks. I think it has more to do with how you view what happens when you die, you know, after you die rather than when you die.
Right. And I don't like to bring religion into this podcast.
Go for it. It's a podcast. Whatever. We'll talk about whatever you want. You big atheist. I'm kidding. She's not an atheist, folks.
I really just don't like talking about politics or religion, you know.
Oh, I mean, my God, I love talking about both.
Well, I like to talk about both, but sometimes not
on a podcast.
Yeah, because I just don't need people trying to, like, seek me out and kill me for no reason. I mean, no. I have enough of those fans out there. But I don't know. I mean, like, I'm a very spiritual person. I've given my life over to Jesus many times, not only as a child, but as an adult many times, been baptized many times. And I have to say, the one thing that's helped me get through the deaths of my brother and my son and my dad is having faith and knowing that we too shall meet again.
There are a lot of wonderful things about having faith, and I think that's absolutely one of them. Let me ask you a question on that. So do you think that there is a heaven and hell and a punishment and, like, a different leveling for how good you were on this life?
Oh, yeah. Effect? Oh, yeah.
I'm so screwed.
And you know,
some heads in a rosary right now, because, folks, I'm bleeped.
And you know how competitive I am. So
I know.
I am no way going to, like, get on rung number two or three. I know I'm not going down. But the elevator for me is only going up. So, you know, like, when I can't climb Mount Kilimanjaro, I expect to be, you know, I am hoping that all the good I continue to do on this earth every single day is going to help propel me in that elevator to the very top floor, the penthouse.
Now, is that a motivator for why you do things? Or do you think that's just like, I do this and good for that? Because I tell you, it's a strong motivator for me. I would actually, like, I'm going to stop eating, like, you know, puppies and, like, souls of young babies.
I do somewhere in my inner head. Yeah. I do have that thought of, I do believe that there's this little calendar on the wall of some sorts, and you get good marks and bad marks for things that you do in life. I believe that our Father in heaven does that, and I am hoping that my good marks are going to totally outweigh my bad marks, and that I will definitely. And so, yeah, I look at it from a competitive standpoint.
I look at it like Santa Claus. I'm with you. Ever since I was a little kid, it was like, how many of your good deeds outweigh your bad deeds? And I learned early on, if you do a lot of really good stuff, you get great presents. If you kind of suck at it, you get coal. So from a religious and a Santa Claus standpoint, I'm with you on both counts. I think there might be some tallying system out there.
So do you have this conversation with your children at all?
No. And you know, it's interesting. I'm looking forward to it because I fully expect it. I remember asking questions about God and what happens when you die. And I don't think my parents were quite comfortable with having these conversations, but I look forward to it. But I'm going to come from it a place of, I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows. Here are different things people believe in, and kind of helping them shape. Because my daughter goes to a very religious institution now, and she goes to prayer every week. And so she's being raised in a whole different ideology that I never had growing up. And I hope that fosters her to ask these questions.
So that was going to be my next question. So I don't know.
I'm a pagan witch, in case you're wondering. She's about to ask me. No, I'm not a pagan witch. I love them.
I'm just saying, I've never asked you your religious beliefs, and I don't know if you go to church, and I don't know if your children go to Sunday school. So, you know, I know we've had that discussion with our twin 8-year-old grandsons. They go to Sunday school, and they talk about Jesus and all that kind of stuff. We've not had that mortality conversation with them at 8, of course, not yet. But that was my next question is, you know, how religious do you raise your children?
So they're at a church school now, and I'm all open-minded to all of that. And I'm open-minded to anything that's inclusive. And I love the idea of having a higher power thing. I think at this age, they really don't have any sort of comprehension about of any of that stuff, but I think it'll be a good foundation. She'll go from there to a public school. And, you know, at some point she'll ask those questions, but she does talk about death a lot. In fact, we went to visit a mutual friend of ours, and she has this really sweet puppy, and Estelle was playing with the puppy and licking all her face. We're going to leave. And as we leave, Estelle says, bye-bye, I'll see you later, puppy, if you're not dead. Why would you say that? I look at her, I'm mortified. I'm staring at my friend, I'm like, what? I have no idea why my daughter says it. Why did you say that? She goes, well, her last puppy died, so I don't know if she kills them.
So, oh,
I'm like, no. So then we had a discussion like, she didn't kill her puppy. We had to talk about like getting older and things passing, but she's just, in her mind, it's like they're asleep or something. But so we've had these sort of funny concepts that really, she doesn't get it. She knows it's a term, but doesn't know what it means.
So your parents and Matt's parents are still young enough.
They love you for saying that. And they listen, by the way. So you have made two new very happy fans.
No, I'm just saying they're not like in their 70s and 80s and close to death or anything like that. They're still younger and have their health and everything, I'm assuming.
I don't know. My parents are in ailing health, and my father-in-law, his health is he's struggling. Neither of them are at the peak. They're not in their 40s anymore. But I don't know. We haven't had those discussions. I suspect at some point we will. But like you said, none of us know when we're going.
Right, right. And so that's what I'm saying. Estelle really hasn't lost any grandparents or anything like that.
No, the closest thing she's lost are toys that the dog eats.
You have,
but she's very focused. We do. Oh my gosh. Speaking of that, my dog keeps digging up something in the backyard, and I was getting so angry, couldn't figure out what it was. And the same friend that had the dead dog, her dog went back and started digging, and was digging up where the other dog was buried. So we just might have to have that discussion. I don't know what's buried in my backyard, but I hope it's not a person. I suspect any day now, my boars are going to be pulling in like a femur bone or some hamster from the 80s. I don't know.
But you'll have an amazing dinner party there some night and an arm and a handle. Your dog
Let's
will
hope
be
it's Halloween when it happens, so I can really enjoy the scare part of it. The kids haven't lost anybody, but we talk about it. Yeah, I think you have to.
So that was my next question was, you know, with your children not really losing anybody, you know, they haven't had to deal with death. And thank God, I mean, they're still very young, and you hate to have them deal with it. But like you said, we never know when it's going to happen. And, you know, it's like one of those conversations you have to have, like the birds and the bees conversation, you know? I mean, like with the twin 8-year-olds, you know, my daughter's already looking at me going, Mom, we really need to start talking to them about this. And I'm like, we? I already did that when you guys were little. And she's like, I don't know how to talk to boys about this. And I'm like, oh, Lord.
Please. It's your job there, baby doll. Do you do anything? Because if you've lost people earlier, like with your son or brother, how do you deal with anniversaries? Do you celebrate them or talk about them and keep them alive, or do you stay quiet and reserved? How do you deal with the anniversaries of deaths?
I think I keep my brother's memory alive and his life and story alive because he died of a heart attack. So that's why I deal with the American Heart Association so much. You know, that's that, you know, and with my son, you know, I just love talking about death and how I've been able to deal with my son's death. And I love to speak at grief counseling seminars and big, huge workshops to talk about death, because I think the more you can talk about it and share that person's life with other people, mm-hmm. the more it helps you. You know, it's very therapeutic for me to talk about my son. And even though it's not as painful now as it was in the earlier years, you know, it still brings tears to my eyes and so on and so forth. But I truly believe the therapeutic part of it is talking about it, is sharing, mm-hmm. sharing, you know, instead of just shoving it in the corner and just, you know, letting it dwell up inside of me and cause me to be
there. And telling your son that the cat is out of the backyard by the tree.
But you know, it just, I, you know, the sad thing is the last time I saw him was on 4th of July weekend. The last time I saw him was on Mother's Day weekend. And then I had to bury him on 4th of July weekend. So Mother's Day and 4th of July just aren't big celebratory, you know, mm-hmm. things for me. I don't look forward to Mother's Day really that much anymore, because that was the last time I got to see my son, even though I'm glad I got to see my son then. And then 4th of July, you know, everybody's usually celebrating and fireworks, and I just don't really want to celebrate, you know. And it's been a long time. It's been 11 years. And you'd think I would move past that, but those are just two holidays that I don't really care to celebrate or be joyful.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I don't know, because like there's some cultures that do. They celebrate the dead and keep them alive. And with your view of there being an afterlife and coming to join them, I didn't know if maybe you did the same thing, like on the 4th of July, honoring or celebrating him. But it's such a personal, emotional thing that I think no matter how you handle that grief, you can disagree with you, like, but I think that grief never goes away. It may change and evolve over time how you respond to it, but the grief never goes away when you lose someone you care about.
No.
And it's personal. No one answer, I think, fits for any one person.
No, the pain never goes away. You know, that old saying that time heals all, you know, I do believe
that.
It's actually drugs
Lies.
Probably that heal all.
Amen. See, back to Xanax.
So, you know, they have the old verbiage of saying, you know, time heals all. And in a way, I guess that's true, because I can actually say the first couple years after my son's death, I was a basket case. Nobody wanted to be around me. I was not a happy person. I was sad and crying all the time. I couldn't, it was hard. And I could actually say that every year that has gone on and on and on, it's gotten, I don't want to say easier, but it just, the pain is not as sharp. The pain is not as intense. You have your moments, but it's nothing compared to those first 2, 3, 4 years. You know, it was.
I find it interesting that people who are suffering through loss, we in American culture have a really hard time dealing with grief or sadness. I think right at the funeral, right after it happens, people allow you to cry and freak out. But then when they ask, how are you? They really just went, I'm fine. Even if you're not, they don't feel comfortable letting somebody grieve or being sad. They want to sort of fix it. And you cannot fix it. The emotions are going to carry on and they're going to last for a while. And that's one area I'm actually surprisingly good in, is sort of allowing that happen. Because I've had several friends and family members that have lost to suicide. And I think that adds another special layer to your grief that hangs on. But it's fascinating to me how people, knowing, even people who've lost someone really important to them, still struggle with that. So,
right. So I guess the takeaway here is that we just want you to make sure.
You want to live forever.
You just got to make sure that you live every day to your fullest, because you never know when it's going to be your last day. And you never know when the people that you're talking to, it could be their last day, a car accident, like you said, a suicide, a murder, whatever. I'm like, you just don't know. So I think the takeaway here is get everything done that you want to do in life. Don't let anything hold you back. If you want to do it, do it, because tomorrow's not promised, and live every day like it's your last day. And when you put your head on your pillow at night, go, you know what? I had one hell of a great day today. If you got to take me tonight, take me, because I did it all today. You know, I don't know. I mean, like, I just, that's how I look at life. I just have to look at life every day. Like when I wake up in the morning, you know, God's given me another day. I'm going to do the best I can today. I'm not going to feel sorry for myself. I'm going to get out there and I'm going to do everything I can possibly do to just make my place on this earth before I leave.
And I'm going to bed saying, not today, Satan, not today.
So with that said, I hope you all feel a little bit better about our subject today on mortality. I hope Michael and I shed some light on it and let you see a lighter side to us and our views on mortality. And make sure you get out there and see us everywhere on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, everywhere. Just look us up. We're out there. And I hope you all have a great rest of the week. And we will catch you next week.